Finally satisfied, he gave me a sharp nod. "We'll start tomorrow." Chapter 10.
"Excuse me, Mr. Nagy. I can't really concentrate with Lissa and Rose passing notes over there."
Mia was attempting to distract attention from herself, as well as from her inability to answer Mr. Nagy's question, and it was ruining what had otherwise been a promising day. A few of the Fox rumors still circulated, but most people wanted to talk about Christian attacking Ralph. I still hadn't cleared Christian of the Fox incident. I was pretty sure he was psycho enough to have done it, as some crazy sign of affection for Lissa. But, whatever his motives, he had shifted the attention off her, just as he'd said. Mr. Nagy, legendary for his ability to humiliate students by reading notes aloud, homed in on us like a missile. He snatched the note away, and the excited class settled in for a full reading. I swallowed my groan, trying to look as blank and unconcerned as possible. Beside me, Lissa looked like she wanted to die.
"My, my," he said, looking the note over. "If only students would write this much in their essays. One of you has got considerably worse writing than the other, so forgive me if I get anything wrong here."
He cleared his throat.
"So, I saw Jay last night," begins the person with bad handwriting, to which the response is, "What happened?" followed by no fewer than 5 question marks. Understandable, since sometimes 1, let alone 4, just won't get the point across, eh?
The class laughed, and I noticed Mia throwing me a particularly mean smile.
The first speaker responds, "What do you think happened? We hooked up in one of the empty lounges."
Mr. Nagy glanced up after hearing some more giggles in the room. His British accent only added to the hilarity.
"May I assume, by this reaction, that the use of hook up pertains to the more recent, shall we say, carnal application of the term than the tamer one I grew up with?"
More snickers ensued. Straightening up, I said boldly, "Yes, sir, Mr. Nagy, that would be correct, sir." A number of people in the class laughed outright.
"Thank you for that confirmation, Miss Hathaway. Now, where was I? Ah, yes." The other speaker then asks, "How was it?" The response is, "Good," punctuated with a smiley face to confirm said adjective. "Well, I suppose kudos are in order for the mysterious J, So, like, how far did you guys go?" Ladies, said Mr. Nagy, "I do hope this doesn't surpass a PG rating." "Not very. We got caught. And again, we are showed the severity of the situation, this time through the use of a not-smiling face." "What happened?" "Dimitri showed up. He threw Jesse out and then bitched me out."
The class lost it, both from hearing Mr. Nagy say bitched and from finally getting some participants named.
"Why, Mr. Zeklos, are you the aforementioned Jay? The one who earned a smiley face from the sloppy writer?"
Jesse's face turned beet red, but he didn't look entirely displeased at having his exploits made known in front of his friends. He'd kept what had happened a secret thus far, including the blood talk, because I suspected Dimitri had scared the hell out of him.
"Well, while I applaud a good misadventure as much as the next teacher, whose time is utterly wasted, do remind your friends in the future that my class is not a chat room."
He tossed the paper back onto Lissa's desk. "Miss Hathaway, it seems there's no feasible way to punish you, since you're already maxed out on penalties around here. Ergo, you, Miss Dragomir, will serve 2 detentions instead of 1 on behalf of your friend. Stay here when the bell rings, please." After class, Jesse found me, an uneasy look on his face.
Hey, about that note? You know, I didn't have anything to do with that. If Belikov finds out about it, you'll tell him? I mean, you'll let him know I didn't...
Yeah, I interrupted him. Don't worry, you're safe. Standing with me, Lissa watched him walk out of the room. Thinking of how easily Dmitri had thrown him around, and of his apparent cowardice, I couldn't help but remark, "You know, Jesse's suddenly not as hot as I used to think." She only laughed.
"You better go. I've got desks to wash."
I left her, heading back for my dorm. As I did, I passed a number of students gathered in small clusters outside the building. I regarded them wistfully, wishing I had the free time to socialize.
"No, it's true," I heard a confident voice say.
Camille Conta, beautiful and popular from one of the most prestigious families in the Conta clan. She and Lissa had sort of been friends before we left, in the uneasy way two powerful forces keep an eye on each other.
"They like clean toilets or something."
"Oh my God," her friend said. "I'd die if I was Mia."
I smiled. Apparently, Jesse had spread some of the stories I'd told him last night. Unfortunately, the next overheard conversation shattered my victory.
"I heard it was still alive, like twitching on her bed."
"That's so gross. Why would they just leave it there?"
"I don't know. Why kill it in the first place?" "You think Ralph was right? That she and Rose did it to get kicked?"
They saw me and shut up. Scowling, I skulked off across the quadrangle. Still alive. Still alive. I'd refused to let Lissa talk about the similarities between the fox and what happened 2 years ago. I didn't want to believe they were connected, and I certainly didn't want her to either. But I had not been able to stop thinking about that incident, not only because it was chilling, but because it really did remind me of what had just happened in her room. We had been out in the woods near campus one evening, having skipped out on our last class. I'd traded a pair of cute, rhinestone-studded sandals to Abby Badika for a bottle of peach schnapps. Desperate, yes, but you did what you had to in Montana, which she'd somehow gotten a hold of. Lissa had shaken her head in disapproval when I suggested cutting class to go put the bottle out of its misery, but she'd come along anyway, like always. We found an old log to sit on near a scummy green marsh. A half moon cast a tiny sliver of light on us, but it was more than enough for vampires and half vampires to see by. Passing the bottle back and forth, I grilled her on Aaron. She'd fessed up that the two of them had had sex the week before, and I felt a surge of jealousy that she'd been the one to have sex first.
"So, what was it like?"
She shrugged and took another drink.
"I don't know. It wasn't anything."
"What do you mean it wasn't anything? Didn't the earth move or the planets align or something?"
"No,"
she said, smothering a laugh.
"Of course not."
I didn't really get why that should be funny, but I could tell she didn't want to talk about it. This was around the time the bond had begun forming, and her emotions were starting to creep into me now and then. I held up the bottle and glared at it. "I don't think this stuff is working."
"That's because there's barely any alcohol in..."
The sound of something moving in the brush came from nearby. I immediately shot up, putting my body between her and the noise.
"It's some animal,"
she said when a minute went by in silence. That didn't mean it wasn't dangerous. The school's wards kept out Strigoi, but wild animals often wandered into the outskirts of campus, posing their own threats. Bears. Cougars. "Come on," I told her. "Let's head back." We hadn't gone very far when I heard something moving again, and someone stepped out into our path.
"Ladies?"
"Ms. Karp." We froze, and whatever quick reactions I'd shown back by the marsh disappeared as I delayed a few moments in hiding the bottle behind my back. A half smile crossed her face, and she held out her hand. Sheepishly, I gave the bottle to her, and she tucked it under her arm. She turned without another word, and we followed, knowing there would be consequences to deal with.
You think no one notices when half a class is gone? She asked after a little while.
Half a class?
A few of you apparently chose today to skip. Must be the nice weather. Spring fever.
Lissa and I trudged along. I'd never been comfortable around Ms. Karp since the time she'd healed my hands. Her weird, paranoid behavior had taken on a strange quality to me, a lot stranger than before. Scary, even. And lately, I couldn't look at her without seeing those marks by her forehead. Her deep red hair usually covered them, but not always. Sometimes there were new marks. Sometimes the old ones faded to nothing. A weird fluttering noise sounded to my right. We all stopped.
One of your classmates, I imagine, murmured Ms. Karp, turning toward the sound.
But when we reached the spot, we found a large black bird lying on the ground. Birds, and most animals, didn't do anything for me, but even I had to admire its sleek feathers and fierce beak. It could probably peck someone's eyes out in 30 seconds, if it weren't obviously dying. With a last half-hearted shake, the bird finally went still.
What is that? Is it a crow? I asked.
Too big, said Ms. Karp. It's a raven.
Is it dead?
Asked Lissa.
I peered at it.
Yeah, definitely dead. Don't touch it.
Probably attacked by another bird, observed Ms. Karp. They fight over territory and resources sometimes.
Lissa knelt down, compassion on her face. I wasn't surprised since she'd always had a thing for animals. She'd lectured me for days after I'd instigated the infamous hamster and hermit crab fight. I'd viewed the fight as a testing of worthy opponents. She'd seen it as animal cruelty. Transfixed, she reached toward the raven.
Liss! I exclaimed, horrified. It's probably got a disease.
But her hand moved out like she hadn't even heard me. Miss Karp stood there like a statue, her white face looking like a ghost's. Liss's fingers stroked the raven's wings.
Liss,
I repeated, starting to move toward her, to pull her back. Suddenly, a strange sensation flooded through my head, a sweetness that was beautiful and full of life. The feeling was so intense, it stopped me in my tracks. Then, the raven moved. Lissa gave a small scream and snatched her hand back. We both stared, wide-eyed. The raven flapped its wings, slowly trying to right itself and stand up. When it managed to do so, it turned toward us, fixing Lissa with a look that seemed too intelligent for a bird. Its eyes held hers, and I couldn't read her reaction through the bond. At long last, the raven broke the gaze and lifted into the air, strong wings carrying it away. Wind stirring the leaves was the only sound left.
Oh, my God, breathed Lissa. What just happened?
Hell if I know, I said, hiding my stark terror. Miss Karp strode forward and grabbed Lissa's arm, forcefully turning her so that they faced each other. I was there in a flash, ready to take action if crazy Karp tried anything, though even I had qualms about taking down a teacher.
Nothing happened, said Miss Karp in an urgent voice, her eyes wild-looking. Do you hear me? Nothing. And you can't tell anyone about what you saw. Both of you. Promise me. Promise me you won't ever talk about this again.
Lissa and I exchanged uneasy glances.
Okay,
she croaked out.
Ms. Karp's grip relaxed a little.
And don't ever do it again. If you do, they'll find out. They'll try to find you.
She turned to me.
You can't let her do it. Not ever again.
On the quad, inside my dorm, someone was saying my name.
Hey, Rose, I've called you like 100 times.
I forgot about Ms. Karp and the raven and glanced over at Mason, who had apparently started walking with me toward the dorm while I was off in La-La Land. Sorry, I mumbled. I'm out of it. Just, tired.
Too much excitement last night.
I gave him a narrow-eyed look. Nothing I couldn't handle.
I guess.
He laughed, though he didn't exactly sound amused.
Sounds like Jesse couldn't handle it.
He did okay.
If you say so. But personally, I think you've got bad taste.
I stopped walking. And I don't think it's any of your business. He looked away angrily.
You made it the whole class's business.
Hey, I didn't do that on purpose.
Would have happened anyway. Jesse's got a big mouth.
He wouldn't have told.
Yeah, said Mason, because he's so cute and has such an important family.
Stop being an idiot, I snapped. And why do you even care? Jealous I'm not doing it with you?
His flush grew, going all the way to the roots of his red hair. I just don't like hearing people talk shit about you, that's all. There are a lot of nasty jokes going around. They're calling you a slut.
I don't care what they call me.
Oh, yeah. You're really tough. You don't need anyone.
I stopped.
I don't.
I'm one of the best novices in this fucking place. I don't need you acting all gallant and coming to my defense. Don't treat me like I'm some helpless girl.
I turned around and kept walking, but he caught up to me easily. The woes of being 5'7". Look, I didn't mean to upset you. I'm just worried about you.
I gave a harsh laugh.
I'm serious. Wait, he began. I did something for you, sort of.
I went to the library last night and tried to look up St. Vladimir. I stopped again.
You did?
Yeah, but there wasn't much on Anna. All the books were kind of generic. Just talked about him healing people, bringing them back from the edge of death. That last part hit a nerve.
Was there anything else? I stammered.
He shook his head.
No. You probably need some primary sources, but we don't have any here.
Primary what? He scoffed, a smile breaking over his face.
Do you do anything but pass notes? We just talked about them the other day in Andrew's class. They're books from the actual time period you want to study. Secondary ones are written by people living today. You'll get better information if you find something written by the guy himself, or someone who actually knew him.
Huh. Okay. What are you, like a boy genius now? Mason gave me a light punch in the arm.
I pay attention, that's all. You're so oblivious. You miss all sorts of things.
He smiled nervously.
And look, I'm really sorry about what I said. I was just
jealous, I realized. I could see it in his eyes. How had I never noticed this before? He was crazy about me. I guess I really was oblivious.
It's all right, Mace. Forget about it.
I smiled. And thanks for looking that stuff up. He smiled back, and I went inside, sad that I didn't feel the same way about him. Chapter 11
You need something to wear?
Lissa asked.
Hmm?
I glanced over at her. We were waiting for Mr. Nagy's Slavic arts class to start, and I was preoccupied with listening to Mia adamantly deny the claims about her parents to one of her friends.
It's not like they're servants or anything,
she exclaimed, clearly flustered. Straightening her face, she tried for haughtiness.
They're practically advisors. The Drozdovs don't decide anything without them.
I choked on a laugh, and Lissa shook her head.
You're enjoying this way too much.
Because it's awesome. What did you just ask me? I dug through my bag, messily looking for my lip gloss. I made a face when I found it. It was almost empty. I didn't know where I was going to score some more.
I asked you if you needed something to wear tonight, she said.
Well, yeah, of course I do. But none of your stuff fits me.
What are you going to do?
I shrugged my shoulders. Improvise, like always. I don't really care anyway. I'm just glad Kirova's letting me go. We had an assembly tonight. It was November 1st. All Saints' Day, which also meant we'd been back almost a month now. A royal group was visiting the school, including Queen Tatiana herself. Honestly, that wasn't what excited me. She'd visited the academy before. It was pretty common and a lot less cool than it sounded. Besides, after living among humans and elected leaders, I didn't think much of stiff royals. Still, I'd gotten permission to go because everyone else would be there. It was a chance to hang out with actual people for a change and not stay locked in my dorm room. A little freedom was definitely worth the pain of sitting through a few boring speeches. I didn't stay to chat with Lissa after school like I usually did. Dimitri had stuck to his promise about extra trainings, and I was trying to stick to mine. I now had 2 additional hours of practice with him, one before and one after school. The more I watched him in action, the more I understood the badass god reputation. He clearly knew a lot. His 6 Molnia marks proved as much, and I burned to have him teach me what he knew. When I arrived at the gym, I noticed he was wearing a t-shirt and loose running pants as opposed to his usual jeans. It was a good look for him. Really good. "Stop looking," I immediately told myself. He positioned me so we stood facing each other on the mat and crossed his arms.
"What's the first problem you run into when facing a Strigoi?"
"They're immortal?"
"Think of something more basic."
"More basic than that?" I considered. "They could be bigger than me, and stronger." Most Strigoi, unless they'd been human first, had the same height as their Moroi cousins. Strigoi also had better strength, reflexes, and senses than Dampires. That's why Guardians trained so hard. We had a learning curve to compensate for. Dimitri nodded.
"That makes it difficult, but not impossible. You can usually use a person's extra height and weight against them."
He turned and demonstrated several maneuvers, pointing out where to move and how to strike someone. Going through the motions with him, I gained some insight into why I took such a regular beating in group practice. I absorbed his techniques quickly and couldn't wait to actually use them. Near the end of our time together, he let me try.
"Go ahead," he said. "Try to hit me."
I didn't need to be told twice. Lunging forward, I tried to land a blow and was promptly blocked and knocked down onto the mat. Pain surged through my body, but I refused to give in to it. I jumped up again, hoping to catch him off guard. I didn't. After several more failed attempts, I stood up and held out my hands in a gesture of truce. "Okay, what am I doing wrong?"
"Nothing."
I wasn't as convinced. If I wasn't doing anything wrong, I'd have rendered you unconscious by now.
"Unlikely. Your moves are all correct, but this is the first time you've really tried. I've done it for years."
I shook my head and rolled my eyes at his older and wiser manner. He'd once told me he was 24. "Whatever you say, Grandpa. Can we try it again?"
"We're out of time. Don't you want to get ready?"
I looked at the dusty clock on the wall and perked up. Almost time for the banquet. The thought made me giddy. I felt like Cinderella, but without the clothes. "Hell yeah, I do." He walked off ahead of me. Studying him carefully, I realized I couldn't let the opportunity go by. I leapt at his back, positioning myself exactly the way he'd taught me. I had the element of surprise. Everything was perfect, and he wouldn't even see me coming. Before I could make contact, he spun around at a ridiculously high speed. In one deft motion, he grabbed me like I weighed nothing and threw me to the ground, pinning me there. I groaned. I didn't do anything wrong. His eyes looked levelly into mine as he held my wrists, but he didn't look as serious as he had during the lesson. He seemed to find this funny.
"The battle cry sort of gave you away. Try not to yell next time."
Would it have really made a difference if I had been quiet? He thought about it.
"No. Probably not."
I sighed loudly, still in too much of a good mood to really let this disappointment get me down. There were some advantages to having such a kick-ass mentor, one who always happened to have a foot of height on me and outweighed me considerably. And that wasn't even considering his strength. He wasn't bulky, but his body had a lot of hard, lean muscle. If I could ever beat him, I could beat anyone. All of a sudden, it occurred to me that he was still holding me down. The skin on his fingers was warm as he clutched my wrists. His face hovered inches from my own, and his legs and torso were actually pressing against mine. Some of his long brown hair hung around his face, and he appeared to be noticing me, too, almost like he had that night in the lounge. And, oh God, did he smell good! Breathing became difficult for me, and it had nothing to do with the workout or my lungs being crushed. I would have given anything to be able to read his mind right then. Ever since that night in the lounge, I'd noticed him watching me with the same studious expression. He never actually did it during the trainings themselves. Those were business. But before and after, he would sometimes lighten up just a little, and I'd see him look at me in a way that was almost admiring. And sometimes, if I was really, really lucky, he'd smile at me. A real smile, too, not the dry one that accompanied the sarcasm we tossed around so often. I didn't want to admit it to anyone, not to Lissa, not even to myself. But some days, I lived for those smiles. They lit up his face. Gorgeous, no longer adequately described him. Hoping to appear calm, I tried to think of something professional and guardian-related to say. Instead, I said, So, you got any other moves to show me? His lips twitched, and for a moment, I thought I was going to get one of those smiles. My heart leaped. Then, with visible effort, he pushed the smile back and once more became my tough love mentor. He shifted off me, leaned back on his heels, and rose.
Come on, we should go.
I scrambled to my own feet and followed him out of the gym. He didn't look back as he walked, and I mentally kicked myself on the way back to my room. I was crushing on my mentor. Crushing on my older mentor. I had to be out of my mind. He was 7 years older than me, old enough to be my, well, okay, nothing, but still older than me. 7 years was a lot. He'd been learning to write when I was born. When I'd been learning to write and throw books at my teachers, he'd probably been kissing girls. Probably lots of girls, considering how he looked. I so did not need this complication in my life right now. I found a passable sweater back in my room, and after a quick shower, I headed across campus to the reception. Despite the looming stone walls, fancy statues, and turrets on the outside of the buildings, the academy's insides were quite modern. We had Wi-Fi, fluorescent lights, and just about anything else technological you could imagine. The commons in particular looked pretty much like the cafeterias I'd eaten in while in Portland and Chicago, with simple rectangular tables, soothing taupe walls, and a little room off to the side where our dubiously prepared meals were served. Someone had at least hung framed black-and-white photos along the walls in an effort to decorate it, but I didn't really consider pictures of vases and leafless trees art. Tonight, however, someone had managed to transform the normally boring commons into a bona fide dining room. Vases spilling over with crimson roses and delicate white lilies, glowing candles, tablecloths made of, wait for it, blood-red linen. The effect was gorgeous. It was hard to believe this was the same place I usually ate chicken patty sandwiches in. It looked fit for, well, a queen. The tables had been arranged in straight lines, creating an aisle down the middle of the room. We had assigned seating, and naturally, I couldn't sit anywhere near Lissa. She sat in the front with the other Morai. I was in the back with the novices. But she did catch my eye when I entered and flashed me a smile. She'd borrowed a dress from Natalie. Blue, silky, and strapless, that looked amazing with her pale features. Who'd known Natalie owned anything so good? It made my sweater lose a few cool points. They always conducted these formal banquets in the same way. A head table sat on a dais at the front of the room, where we could all ooh and ah and watch Queen Tatiana and other royals eat dinner. Guardians lined the walls, as stiff and formal as statues. Dimitri stood among them, and a weird feeling twisted my stomach as I recalled what had happened in the gym. His eyes stared straight ahead, as if focusing on nothing and everything in the room at once. When the time came for the royal's entrance, we all stood up respectfully and watched as they walked down the aisle. I recognized a few, mostly those who had children attending the academy. Victor Dashkov was among them, walking slowly and with a cane. While I was happy to see him, I cringed to watch each agonizing step he took toward the front of the room. Once that group had passed, four solemn guardians with red and black pinstripe jackets entered the commons. Everyone but the guardians along the walls sank to our knees in a silly show of loyalty. What a lot of ceremony and posturing, I thought wearily. Moroi monarchs were chosen by the previous monarch from within the royal families. The king or queen couldn't choose one of his or her own direct descendants, and a council from the noble and royal families could dispute the choice with enough cause. That almost never happened, though. Queen Tatiana followed her guards, wearing a red silk dress and matching jacket. She was in her early 60s and had dark gray hair bobbed to her chin and crowned with a Miss America-type tiara. She moved into the room slowly, like she was taking a stroll, four more guardians at her back. She moved through the novices' section fairly quickly, though she did nod and smile here and there. Vampires might be just the half-human, illegitimate children of the Moroi, but we trained and dedicated our lives to serving and protecting them. The likelihood was strong that many of us gathered here would die young, and the queen had to show her respect for that. When she got to the Moroi section, she paused longer and actually spoke to a few students. It was a big deal to be acknowledged, mostly a sign that someone's parents had gotten in good with her. Naturally, the royals got the most attention. She didn't really say much to them that was all that interesting, mostly just a lot of fancy words.
Vasilisa Dragomir.
My head shot up. Alarm coursed through the bond at the sound of her name. Breaking protocol, I pushed out of my position and wiggled over to get a better view, knowing no one would notice me when the queen herself had personally singled out the last of the Dragomirs. Everyone was eager to see what the monarch had to say to Lyssa, the runaway princess.
We heard you had returned. We are glad to have the Dragomirs back, even though only one remains. We deeply regret the loss of your parents and your brother. They were among the finest of the Moroi, their deaths a true tragedy.
I'd never really understood the royal we thing, but otherwise everything sounded okay.
You have an interesting name, she continued. Many heroines in Russian fairy tales are named Vasilisa. Vasilisa the Brave, Vasilisa the Beautiful. They are different young women, all having the same name and the same excellent qualities. Strength, intelligence, discipline, and virtue. All accomplished great things, triumphing over their adversaries. Likewise, the Dragomir name commands its own respect. Dragomir kings and queens have ruled wisely and justly in our history. They have used their powers for miraculous ends. They have slain Strigoi, fighting right alongside their guardians. They are royal for a reason.
She waited a moment, letting the weight of her words sink in. I could feel the mood changing in the room, as well as the surprise and shy pleasure creeping out from Lyssa. This would shake the social balance. We could probably expect a few wannabes trying to get in good with Lyssa tomorrow.
Yes, Tatiana continued. You are doubly named with power. Your names represent the finest qualities people have to offer, and hearken back in time to deeds of greatness and valor.
She paused a moment.
But, as you have demonstrated, names do not make a person, nor do they have any bearing on how that person turns out.
And with that verbal slap in the face, she turned away and continued her procession. A collective shock filled the room. I briefly contemplated and then dismissed any attempts at jumping into the aisle and tackling the queen. Half a dozen guardians would have me down on the floor before I'd even taken five steps. So I sat impatiently through dinner, all the while feeling Lissa's absolute mortification. When the post-dinner reception followed, Lissa made a beeline for the doors leading out to the courtyard. I followed, but got delayed having to weave around and avoid the mingling, socializing people. She'd wandered outside to an adjacent courtyard, one that matched the academy's grand external style. A roof of carved, twisting wood covered the garden, with little holes here and there to let in some light, but not enough to cause damage to Moroi. Trees, leaves now gone for the winter, lined the area and guarded paths leading out to other gardens, courtyards, and the main quadrangle. A pond, also emptied for the winter, lay in a corner, and standing over it was an imposing statue of Saint Vladimir himself. Carved of gray rock, he wore long robes and had a beard and mustache. Rounding a corner, I stopped when I saw Natalie had beaten me to Lissa. I considered interrupting, but stepped back before they could see me. Spying might be bad, but I was suddenly very curious to hear what Natalie had to say to Lissa.
"She shouldn't have said that," Natalie said.
She wore a yellow dress similar in cut to Lissa's, but somehow lacked the grace and poise to make it look as good. Yellow was also a terrible color on her. It clashed with her black hair, which she'd put up into an off-center bun.
"It wasn't right," she went on. "Don't let it bother you. Kind of late for that."
Lissa's eyes were locked firmly on the stone walkway below.
"She was wrong." "She's right," Lissa exclaimed. "My parents, and Andre, they would have hated me for what I did." "No, they wouldn't have," Natalie spoke in a gentle voice. "It was stupid to run away, irresponsible." "So what? You made a mistake. I make mistakes all the time. The other day I was doing this assignment in science, and it was for Chapter 10, and I'd actually read Chapter 11.
Natalie stopped herself, and in a remarkable show of restraint, got herself back on track.
"People change. We're always changing, right? You're not the same as you were then. I'm not the same as I was then."
Actually, Natalie seemed exactly the same to me, but that didn't bother me so much anymore. She'd grown on me.
"Besides," she added, "was running away really a mistake? You must have done it for a reason. You must have gotten something out of it, right? There was a lot of bad stuff going on with you, wasn't there? With your parents and your brother. I mean, maybe it was the right thing to do."
Lissa hid a smile. Both of us were pretty sure Natalie was trying to find out why we had left, just like everyone else in the school. She sort of sucked at being sneaky.
"I don't know if it was, no," Lissa answered. "I was weak. Andre wouldn't have run away. He was so good. Good at everything. Good at getting along with people and all that royal crap. You're good at that, too, I guess. But I don't like it. I mean, I like people, but most of what they do is so fake. That's what I don't like." "Then don't feel bad about not getting involved," Natalie said. "I don't hang out with all those people either. And look at me. I'm just fine. Daddy says he doesn't care if I hang out with the royals or not. He just wants me to be happy."
"And that," I said, finally making my appearance, "is why he should be ruling instead of that bitch of a queen. He got robbed." Natalie nearly jumped 10 feet. I felt pretty confident her vocabulary of swear words mostly consisted of golly and darn.
"I wondered where you were," said Lissa.
Natalie looked back and forth between us, suddenly seeming a little embarrassed to be right between the best friend's dream team. She shifted uncomfortably and tucked some messy hair behind her ear.
"Well, I should go find Daddy. I'll see you back in the room."
"See you," said Lissa. "And thanks." Natalie hurried off. "Does she really call him Daddy?" Lissa cut me a look.
"Leave her alone. She's nice."
"She is, actually. I heard what she said, and as much as I hate to admit it, there was nothing there I could really make fun of. It was all true." I paused. "I'll kill her, you know." The Queen, not Natalie. Screw the Guardians, I'll do it. She can't get away with that.
God, Rose, don't say that. They'll arrest you for treason. Just let it go.
Let it go? After what she said to you? In front of everyone? She didn't answer or even look at me. Instead, she toyed absent-mindedly with the branches of a scraggly bush that had gone dormant for the winter. There was a vulnerable look about her that I recognized and feared. Hey, I lowered my voice. Don't look like that. She doesn't know what she's talking about, okay? Don't let this get you down. Don't do anything you shouldn't. She glanced back up at me.
It's going to happen again, isn't it?
She whispered. Her hand, still clutching the tree, began to tremble. Not if you don't let it. I tried to look at her wrists without being too obvious. You haven't...
No.
She shook her head and blinked back tears.
I haven't wanted to. I was upset after the fox, but it's been okay. I like the coasting thing. I miss seeing you, but everything's been all right. I like...
She paused. I could hear the word forming in her mind. Christian.
I wish you couldn't do that. Or wouldn't.
Sorry. Do I need to give you the Christian's a psychopathic loser talk again?
I think I've got it memorized after the last 10 times, she muttered.
I started to launch into number 11 when I heard the sound of laughter and the clatter of high heels on stone. Mia walked toward us with a few friends in tow, but no Aaron. Immediately, my defenses snapped on. Internally, Lyssa was still shaken over the Queen's comments. Sorrow and humiliation were swirling inside of her. She felt embarrassed over what others must think of her now and kept thinking about how her family would have hated her for running away. I didn't believe that, but it felt real to her, and her dark emotions churned and churned. She was not okay, no matter how casual she'd just tried to act. And I was worried she might do something reckless. Mia was the last person she needed to see right now. What do you want? I demanded. Mia smiled haughtily at Lyssa and ignored me, taking a few steps forward.
Just wanted to know what it's like to be so important and so royal. You must be so excited that the Queen talked to you.
Giggles surfaced from the gathering group. You're standing too close. I stepped between them, and Mia flinched a little, possibly still worried I might break her arm. And hey, at least the Queen knew her name, which is more than I can say for you and your wannabe royal act, or your parents. I could see the pain that caused her. Man, she wanted to be royal so badly.
At least I see my parents, she retorted. At least I know who they both are. God only knows who your father is. And your mom's one of the most famous guardians around, but she couldn't care less about you either. Everyone knows she never visits. Probably was glad when you were gone, if she even noticed.
That hurt. I clenched my teeth. Yeah, well, at least she's famous. She really does advise royals and nobles. She doesn't clean up after them. I heard one of her friends snicker behind her. Mia opened her mouth, no doubt to unleash one of the many retorts she'd had to accumulate since the story started going around, when the light bulb suddenly went off in her head.
It was you, she said, eyes wide. Someone told me Jesse'd started it, but he couldn't have known anything about me. He got it from you, when you slept with him.
Now she was really starting to piss me off. I didn't sleep with him. Mia pointed at Lyssa and glared back at me.
So that's it, huh? You do her dirty work because she's too pathetic to do it herself. You aren't always going to be able to protect her, she warned. You aren't safe either.
Empty threats. I leaned forward, making my voice as menacing as possible. In my current mood, it wasn't difficult. Yeah? Try and touch me now and find out.
Oh, I hoped she would. I wanted her to. We didn't need her messed-up vendetta in our lives just now. She was a distraction, one I very much wanted to punch right now. Looking past her, I saw Dimitri move out into the garden, eyes searching for something or someone. I had a pretty good idea who it was. When he saw me, he strode forward, shifting his attention when he noticed the crowd gathered around us. Guardians can smell a fight a mile away. Of course, a 6-year-old could have smelled this fight. Dimitri stood beside me and crossed his arms.
Everything all right?
Sure thing, Guardian Belikov. I smiled as I said it, but I was furious, raging even. This whole Mia confrontation had only made Lyssa feel worse. We were just swapping family stories. Ever heard Mia's? It's fascinating.
Come on, said Mia to her followers.
She led them off, but not before she'd given me one last chilling look. I didn't need to read her mind to know what it said. This wasn't over. She was going to try to get one or both of us back. Fine. Bring it on, Mia.
I'm supposed to take you back to your dorm, Dimitri told me dryly. You weren't about to just start a fight, were you?
Of course not, I said, my eyes still staring at the empty doorway Mia had disappeared through. I don't start fights where people can see them.
Rose,
groaned Lyssa.
Let's go. Good night, princess.
He turned, but I didn't move. You going to be okay, Lys? She nodded.
I'm fine.
It was such a lie. I couldn't believe she had the nerve to try to put it past me. I didn't need the bond to see tears shining in her eyes. We should never have come back to this place, I realized bleakly.
Lys.
She gave me a small, sad smile and nodded in Dimitri's direction.
I told you I'm fine. You've got to go.
Reluctantly, I followed him. He led me out toward the other side of the garden.
We may need to add an extra training on self-control, he noted.
I have plenty of Hey! I stopped talking as I saw Christian slip past us, moving down the path we'd just come from. I hadn't seen him at the reception, but if Kirova had released me to come tonight, I suppose she would have done the same for him. You going to see Lyssa? I demanded, shifting my Mia rage to him. He stuffed his hands into his pockets and gave me that look of bad boy indifference.
What if I am? Rose, this isn't the time, said Dimitri.
But it was so the time. Lyssa had ignored my warnings about Christian for weeks. It was time to go to the source and stop their ridiculous flirtation once and for all. Why don't you just leave her alone? Are you so messed up and desperate for attention that you can't tell when someone doesn't like you? He scowled. You're some crazy stalker, and she knows it. She's told me all about your weird obsession, how you're always hanging out in the attic together, how you set Ralph on fire to impress her. She thinks you're a freak, but she's too nice to say anything. His face had paled, and something dark churned in his eyes.
But you aren't too nice.
No, not when I feel sorry for someone.
Enough, said Dimitri, steering me away. Thanks for helping, then, snapped Christian, his voice dripping with animosity.
No problem, I called back over my shoulder. When we'd gone a little ways, I stole a glance behind me and saw Christian standing just outside the garden. He'd stopped walking and now stood staring down the path that led to Lyssa in the courtyard. Shadows covered his face as he thought, and then, after a few moments, he turned around and headed back toward the Moroi dorms. Chapter 12 Sleep came reluctantly that night, and I tossed and turned for a long time before finally going under. An hour or so later, I sat up in bed, trying to relax and sort out the emotions coming to me. Lyssa, scared and upset, unstable. The night's events suddenly came rushing back to me as I went through what could be bothering her. The queen humiliating her, Mia,
maybe even Christian. He could have found her for all I knew. Yet, none of those was the problem right now. Buried within her, there was something else. Something terribly wrong. I climbed out of bed, dressed hastily, and considered my options. I had a third-floor room now, way too high to climb down from, particularly since I had no Ms. Karp to patch me up this time. I would never be able to sneak out of the main hall. That only left going through the appropriate channels.
"Where do you think you're going?"
One of the matrons who supervised my hall looked up from her chair. She sat stationed at the end of the hall, near the stairs going down. During the day, that stairwell had loose supervision. At night, we might as well have been in jail. I crossed my arms. "I need to see Guardian Belikov."
"It's late.
It's an emergency." She looked me up and down.
"You seem okay to me."
"You are going to be in so much trouble tomorrow when everyone finds out you stopped me from reporting what I know."
"Tell me."
"It's private guardian stuff." I gave her as hard a stare as I could manage. It must have worked because she finally stood up and pulled out a cell phone. She called someone, Dimitri, I hoped, but murmured too low for me to hear. We waited several minutes, and then the door leading to the stairs opened. Dimitri appeared, fully dressed and alert, though I felt pretty sure we'd pulled him out of bed. He took one look at me.
"Lisa?"
I nodded. Without another word, he turned around and started back down the stairs. I followed. We walked across the quad in silence, toward the imposing Moroi dorm. It was night for the vampires, which meant it was daytime for the rest of the world. Mid-afternoon sun shone with a cold, golden light on us. The human genes in me welcomed it, and always sort of regretted how Moroi light sensitivity forced us to live in darkness most of the time. Lissa's hall matron gaped when we appeared, but Dimitri was too intimidating to oppose. "She's in the bathroom," I told them. When the matron started to follow me inside, I wouldn't let her. "She's too upset. Let me talk to her alone first." Dimitri considered.
"Yes. Give them a minute."
I pushed the door open. "Liss?" A soft sound, like a sob, came from within. I walked down 5 stalls and found the only one closed. I knocked softly. "Let me in," I said, hoping I sounded calm and strong. I heard a sniffle, and a few moments later, the door unlatched. I wasn't prepared for what I saw. Lissa stood before me, covered in blood. Horrified, I squelched a scream and almost called for help. Looking more closely, I saw that a lot of the blood wasn't actually coming from her. It was smeared on her, like it had been on her hands and she rubbed her face. She sank to the floor and I followed, kneeling before her. "Are you okay?" I whispered. "What happened?" She only shook her head, but I saw her face crumple as more tears spilled from her eyes. I took her hands. "Come on, let's get you cleaned." I stopped. She was bleeding after all. Perfect lines crossed her wrists, not near any crucial veins, but enough to leave wet, red tracks across her skin. She hadn't hit her veins when she did this. Death hadn't been her goal. She met my eyes.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean... Please, don't let them know."
She sobbed.
"When I saw it, I freaked out."
She nodded towards her wrists.
"This just happened before I could stop. I was upset."
"It's okay," I said automatically, wondering what it was. "Come on." I heard a knock on the door.
"Rose?"
"Just a sec," I called back. I took her to the sink and rinsed the blood off her wrists. Grabbing the first aid kit, I hastily put some band-aids on the cuts. The bleeding had already slowed.
"We're coming in," the matron called.
I jerked off my hoodie sweatshirt and quickly handed it to Lissa. She had just pulled it on when Dimitri and the matron entered. He raced to our sides in an instant, and I realized that in hiding Lissa's wrists, I'd forgotten about the blood on her face.
"It's not mine,"
she said quickly, seeing his expression.
It's the rabbit.
Dimitri assessed her, and I hoped he wouldn't look at her wrists. When he seemed satisfied she had no gaping wounds, he asked,
"What rabbit?"
I was wondering the same thing. With shaking hands, she pointed at the trash can.
I cleaned it up, so Natalie wouldn't see.
Dimitri and I both walked over and peered into the can. I pulled myself away immediately, swallowing back my stomach's need to throw up. I don't know how Lissa knew it was a rabbit. All I could see was blood. Blood and blood-soaked paper towels. Globs of gore I couldn't identify. The smell was horrible. Dimitri shifted closer to Lissa, bending down until they were at eye level.
Tell me what happened.
He handed her several tissues.
I came back about an hour ago, and it was there, right there in the middle of the floor, torn apart. It was like it had exploded.
She sniffed.
I didn't want Natalie to find it. I didn't want to scare her. So I cleaned it up. Then I just couldn't, I couldn't go back.
She began to cry and her shoulders shook. I could figure out the rest, the part she didn't tell Dimitri. She'd found the rabbit, cleaned up, and freaked out. Then she'd cut herself. But it was the weird way she coped with things that upset her.
No one should be able to get into those rooms, exclaimed the matron. How is this happening?
Do you know who did it?
Dimitri's voice was gentle. Lissa reached into her pajama pocket and pulled out a crumpled piece of paper. It had so much blood soaked into it, I could barely read it as he held it and smoothed it out. I know what you are. You won't survive being here. I'll make sure of it. Leave now. It's the only way you might live through this. The matron's shock transformed into something more determined, and she headed for the door. I'm getting Ellen. It took me a second to remember that was Kirova's first name.
Tell her we'll be at the clinic, said Dimitri.
When she left, he turned to Lissa.
You should lay down.
When she didn't move, I linked my arm through hers. Come on, Liss. Let's get you out of here. Slowly, she put one foot in front of the other and let us lead her to the Academy's medical clinic. It was normally staffed by a couple of doctors, but at this time of night, only a nurse stayed on duty. She offered to wake one of the doctors, but Dimitri declined.
She just needs to rest.
Lissa had no sooner stretched out on a narrow bed than Kirova and a few others showed up and started questioning her. I thrust myself in front of them, blocking her.
Leave her alone. Can't you see she doesn't want to talk about it? Let her get some sleep first.
Miss Hathaway, declared Kirova, you're out of line as usual. I don't even know what you're doing here.
Dimitri asked if he could speak with her privately and led her into the hall. I heard angry whispers from her, calm and firm ones from him. When they returned, she said stiffly,
You may stay with her for a little while. We'll have janitors do further cleaning and investigation in the bathroom, and your room, Miss Dragomir, and then discuss the situation in detail in the morning.
Don't wake Natalie, whispered Lissa. I don't want to scare her. I cleaned up everything in the room anyway.
Kirova looked doubtful. The group retreated, but not before the nurse asked if Lissa wanted anything to eat or drink. She declined. Once we were alone, I lay down beside her and put my arm around her. I won't let them find out, I told her, sensing her worry about her wrists. But I wish you'd told me before I left the reception. You said you'd always come to me first.
I wasn't going to do it then,
she said, her eyes staring blankly off.
I swear I wasn't going to. I mean, I was upset, but I thought I could handle it. I was trying so hard. Really, Rose, I was. But then I got back to my room and I saw it, and I just lost it. It was like the last straw, you know? And I knew I had to clean it up. Had to clean it up before they saw, before they found out. But there was so much blood. And afterward, after it was done, it was too much. And I felt like I was going to, I don't know, explode, and it was just too much. I had to let it out, you know? I had to...
I interrupted her hysteria. It's okay.